Paddy Power. As much a part of Irish football as spending a 9-month loan spell at Preston North End.
We have to turn our attention to the big story of the day. If you're just joining us, hundreds of Manchester United fans gathered outside Old Trafford earlier. They also gathered outside the Lowry Hotel. They gathered around the team bus, the car of Gary Neville, the car of Michael Oliver, and everyone basically had to stop in their tracks a little bit. Manchester United were due to be playing Liverpool at 4:30. That obviously has not happened yet. Could it happen later on? Well, we don't know. The Premier League have yet to make an announcement on whether or not it'll be played tonight. Could it be played tomorrow? Could it be postponed for longer than that? We'll let you know as soon as there is a development. If you haven't seen the scenes earlier, you've missed fans on the pitch at Old Trafford. Somehow, the protest managed to spill inside the stadiums. We saw a fan with the corner flag. We saw a fan on top of the goals. We saw a fan kicking a ball into the net while videoing himself. Flares were lit up, green flares. And then the fans deserted, basically. Not too much trouble, you would say. Maybe a few bottles and missiles thrown as things developed outside afterwards. But the big confusion is whether or not the supporters entered the dressing rooms, because that, of course, would lead to a whole pile of COVID complications. And that is very much where we are at the moment, a state of uncertainty about whether or not this game will be played this evening. Delighted to say we are joined by Miguel Delaney to chat about this. How are you, Miguel?
Not too bad, thanks. Not in Manchester. I'm in touch with my colleague, Mark Critchley, who has just been basically outside the Lowry Hotel and is waiting to get into the game now. I suppose the nature of these things with COVID these days, I was supposed to be writing on the game from home, but now looks like I'm going to be writing about what is, I suppose you could almost describe it as, the second most effective fan protest in the Premier League era. But of course, really, it's just a continuation of the most effective, which was the Super League 2 weeks ago. I mean, it's all the same tapestry, and that may have been the spark for something much bigger in English football, and the classic case of unintended consequences.
From speaking to your colleague, what is the current state of events in Manchester?
It seems now, which is in stark contrast to an hour ago, that there is some very, very mild optimism that the game might go ahead at 6:30. But that's based on the fact that the area around the stadium is secure. But they're still trying to clear people from outside the hotel. Obviously, I mean, they haven't given a specific time yet. But from what we've been told, there is some kind of... They were hoping for around 6:30. I mean, this is obviously quite small in the larger scheme of things. But say if it does go ahead tonight, it would have a knock-on effect in, say, the Spurs game, which because of broadcasting, would be pushed back as well. But I mean, that's possibly in 90 minutes time. There's still a lot to be done. But an hour ago, it felt like this match just wasn't going to go ahead. Now there is a little bit more talk from here that it's at least more possible. But I mean, it's quite remarkable. I can't remember a situation like this, certainly in the Premier League era.
No, absolutely not. The only kind of sense of chaos I can remember is that faux bomb scare a couple of years ago, Miguel. Like, that's the only thing that you kind of remember a match being pushed back like this. But that was completely out of the blue. That was just a kind of a comedy of errors almost, if you want to put it like this. In this scenario, Manchester United knew there was going to be a protest outside the ground today. How on earth did supporters manage to get into the stadium?
Well, this is the big question. I mean, even I just listened to Gary Neville on television there talking about how it seemed as if supporters almost just walked in. Mm. And I mean, having talked to colleagues there who are meant to be there, for like Mark, who are meant to be there at the game reporting on it, they're at one corner of the stadium, the media entrance, and apparently there was a breach at the other end. But as you say, I mean, there are actually big questions to be asked of Manchester United securing the situation, not least for the fact they had plenty of warning of this. And of course, only, what was it, a week, 10 days ago, there was a breach of their training ground as well, where fans, and it's very much from the same group, ended up speaking to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer about the whole situation. So United security will come under question.
Without question. So how did that particular meeting with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer go? Just remind us, for people who haven't been fully on top of the scenario post the Super League explosion or implosion, I should say.
Well, I suppose, it does maybe reflect on the slightly unfair position Solskjaer is in. But again, it illustrates the complication of the situation, where the fans are basically questioning him on why he was so against the Glazers pre-2007, given he was one of the few figures to actually have spoken up against it. But now, obviously, he's employed by the club. He wasn't going to go that far. And this is ultimately what it comes down to. United fans questioning their figures about the ownership of the club and just how unhappy they are. And I mean, I think it is one point that's worth stressing on this. There's been a lot of stuff about kind of, you know, unsavory scenes, and it's even bizarrely been compared to Stop the Steal in US politics. Mm. But it's not like that. I mean, what we're seeing here, ultimately, it's probably belated fan action in a situation where they had previously felt absolutely powerless. And where, I mean, whatever about the form of protest, people might take issue about, you know, entering private property, all the rest of it. But the motivation for the process is completely valid. We're talking about a social institution that, as I said, that should be the communities, that was offered no protection when the Glazers tried to buy the club. But we should never lose sight of that. This takeover should never have been allowed to happen. And it's quite, I mean, there is one of those ironies that in trying to push through the inevitable, I mean, it's where they always wanted to take this logic, basically, the Glazers. Where they wanted to take this takeover. It was either going to be some form of Super League or something to do with broadcasting rights. And in trying to push through their ownership to extremes, they might have created more problems for themselves than they ever imagined. I mean, yes, we've seen protests before, like the green and gold protests around 2010, 2009, just after they sold Cristiano Ronaldo. They kind of dissipated, and there is this feeling the Glazers are, you know, hardened to this sort of stuff. They'll just persevere. But if there is consistent action like this that sees games get postponed, then we're in kind of a new world of problems. And again, while you might be able to take issue with the nature of the protest, I don't think anyone can take issue with the legitimacy of it.
Absolutely. So like, I mean, it's worth teasing this out, the potential reaction from the Glazers today. So if we rewind all the way back to the takeover and the countless green and gold scarf protests we've seen since then, have we got any inkling privately of what the Glazers thought about that level of protest? Before we get stuck into what this will do to the Glazers today, what about the more, I don't know, acceptable, in inverted commas, the more acceptable forms of protest?
Well, I mean, I have to say, I think it'll be their feeling through this as well. The Glazers, they were prepared to weather it through. Mm. I mean, they're very hard-nosed in that regard. In 2010, they just pushed through, let the fans get on and let them have their outlet. And I suppose it's a big question, really, because this is about sustained pressure. Really, I mean, 2010 dissipated without too much effect. And this has to be the difference this time. And that's, I suppose that's why the fans have taken a kind of a nuclear option, where it's not just a visible protest at games like Green and Gold. It's actually tangibly affecting the running of the club, which is when you get matches postponed or delayed, is exactly that. That's maybe where this moves into a different sphere, and maybe where the Glazers have to take a bit more notice. Now, whether it's going to prompt them to actually sell the club, I think that's fanciful. This is a huge business interest for them. It's going to take a lot more than some minor disruption, which is still what this is, to force them out. I mean, the tragedy of Manchester United in that case is that there's obviously a wider discussion on English football now about introducing new regulations for ownership, about bringing in potential German models or creating more fan representation. United are probably too far gone to benefit that. In fact, there's another irony to this, I suppose, is the only way it could have probably been tangibly affected is if the Super League had actually managed to go ahead. Then you could well, we could, because I mean, I was talking to politics, I interviewed Keir Starmer, the Labour leader, about this very issue. I know it was discussed among EFL clubs. If the Super League had gone ahead, and because that would have been seen against the interests of British business, you could have had a forcible purchase of Manchester United. I think that's the only way, really, that the Glazer ownership could have been prized from the club. As it is, it's very difficult to see, unless business was made so difficult for me. United started to tank financially, which still just feels unlikely given the sheer global size of the club. And it would have to take off a lot more than match delays or match postponements. But they're probably, I mean, but I also think this is why fans of other clubs shouldn't necessarily sneer at United fans, because this could have a beneficial effect for fans of other clubs in future, in that it creates a threshold and should really, I mean, measures should really be brought in to prevent Manchester United, prevent any other club being put in the same situation as Manchester United.
Mm. Like, so that idea that the Glazers won't actually be moved in this situation? Like, people are going to be waking up in the United States this morning hoping to watch Liverpool against Manchester United, and they're going to see a load of people on the pitch. Like, there is, as you say, a proper tangible impact of these protests on the park. Like, who knows what the, what was it, the legacy fan, that great phrase, who knows what the legacy fan would have actually thought about the 2010 protest or anything of that sort. I think it's kind of hard to make a case against the legacy fan or the global fan not being moved a little bit by what they've seen today.
Yeah, I mean, I know. Again, it's caused change. Will it? The Glazers, they really are. This applies to the decisions they take in terms of sacking managers. It applies to personnel. It really is ultimately at the bottom line for them. They will not be moved on anything unless their finances are affected. Now, again, the Super League context might cause some change there, because, I mean, the way it was explained to me is one of the great ambitions of the Glazers, and pretty much all the US owners at Arsenal and Liverpool as well, say, one of their ambitions really with the ownership of these clubs is that they want to increase the value of the clubs at the stroke of a pen. So they've seen the MLS model, and they see that that's a closed shop. And they see MLS clubs are operating at 8 to 10 times their revenue stream. So the value of the club is 8 to 10 times the potential revenue. At the moment, because European football is so open and based on so many unpredictabilities, so you can't guarantee income, the major clubs are operating about 3 to 4 times their revenue streams. Now, basically, the Glazers want, their long-term ambition has been to greatly increase this. And that was either through two goals, through either the Super League or a change in distribution model where, say, a change in broadcast model where they get to broadcast United's games themselves. Now, probably in the medium to long term, in the short to medium term, both of those options or objectives has been cut off. I mean, the Super League, it's got nowhere to go for the moment. There isn't a market. It's going to take a long time for somebody to come back in that regard. So that's one option cut off. But the other key to that is because there's no threat of the Super League at present, because basically, you know, the global football world has told the Super League where to go in that sense, it also removes the threat of it in any negotiations. So basically, I mean, the threat of a Super League is something that's influenced every single discussion and negotiation in football for the last 30 years. It's, you know, it's why, say, in terms of broadcasting rights or the revenue from them, the Big Six managed to increase revenue towards league position, because inevitably that means them. Now, so anytime they have these negotiations, which again is relevant to these Glazer long-term goals of eventually, say, selling the right to United games themselves, well, I mean, it's just not an option anymore, because they've got no way to the table. They've played their hand, and that, you know, it's possible that might cause a rethink. But right now, there's no word about any sort of willing sale or anything like that. And obviously, previously there's been interest, say, from Saudi Arabia, although being purchased by the Saudi Arabian state or something equivalent to what was in store for Newcastle United would be, I think, a fate worse than the Glazers, given the kind of moral dimensions there. But even throughout that, there was no indication that the Glazers were ever willing to sell. Now, again, maybe the changed landscape through the demise of the Super League causes some, and who knows, maybe these protests alongside the Super League may cause changes. But from everything you hear and everything we expect, the Glazers are going to be as hard-nosed as ever.
Was it a coincidence, Miguel, that the latest news about, or reports about, the latest TV deal came right on the tail of the Super League story? Was that just a coincidence of timing? Because it certainly seemed to me that that story strengthened the Premier League position, keeping the status quo until whatever it is, 2024, 2025.
Well, from what I was told, that basically one of the reasons, or it was actually one of a few reasons why the Super League was pushed in that sense, because the Big Six were irritated at the progress and negotiations about a new broadcast contract last month, which I think was meant to be announced. And again, just like in terms of the lack of progress with the big with project big picture plans, it was one of the things that ultimately moved the Big Six or the Super League 12 to enact their plan.
Yeah, it did seem quite interesting, actually, that was one of the things that came immediately afterwards. And as you say, if they want to enhance their revenue stream, then certainly the Premier League have almost moved to cut off any sort of greater earnings in that regard. Not that the earnings that they're making off TV are a pittance or anything like that. It's still extraordinary money. Like, what's interesting now, we're watching scenes of rubbish being collected outside Old Trafford. It's how these scenes will go down around the country, Miguel, when it comes to the public like the Super League situation was such a, like the 99% of people in the UK seem to be behind the protest initially, but behind what Gary Neville said immediately on Sky Sports. Is that going to drop dramatically now when people see the protest today, do you think?
It's an interesting one. I mean, just judging off social media and the like, say it seems it's about 50-50, and there's some people that are talking about, you know, these scenes and all the rest of it. But I mean, I have to say, again, I suppose to return to the point, whatever you think about the nature of the protest, I think it was about time and worthwhile the fans protested. And really, I think this is actually necessary to keep up the momentum behind the Super League protest. Because, I mean, that's always the danger here, that they had the fans had a genuine moment of power of the Super League. And there's always the threat that when things start to return to normal, which has been the case, as games get played and you go through a cycle and the kind of the normal football news takes over, that suddenly that gets forgotten about and just the status quo remains. That's basically the recent history of football in that regard. But instead, this keeps the issue shifting along. And I think that's what needs to happen, because I mean, I've written this so many times in Independence and elsewhere that, I mean, football ownership and the general direction of football around the world, where basically it's embraced hyper-capitalism to a greater degree than any sport, and it's causing all these problems where there's almost this predictability in so many leagues, even in England where there's a Big Six. And it needs a change of direction. It needs something back towards fan representation, towards greater distribution of resources. And ultimately, it's events like this that start to spark that, or keep it going at least.
How do you then get to a place where that fan representation model actually becomes a reality? Because it will have to come as a result of voluntarily relinquishing some power from the standpoint of the Glazers. Of course, there is one way to do this. It is this sort of protest, which actually may have some sort of impact. I think you're probably right in how much impact will this actually have privately when the Glazers are having conversations this evening. But how do you actually get to a point from here where there is such a stranglehold over the league from so few really rich people to a point of a 50+1 model, for example?
Well, I mean, there's going to be a fan-led review by the government, and I think there is a wider appetite for fan representation. And so if some sort of legislation can be brought in where, at the very least, there's more of a say on football boards, that's how you start it. And that is possibly the next tangible step in this.
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting few weeks. So this evening then, Miguel, it does seem that one of the roadblocks to this game being played is the idea that a fan got into a dressing room, and when it comes to the COVID compliance officer who was at the game, that is, I guess, the last remaining obstacle to this game being played, that he or she goes in, sanitizes the place, I assume, and away we go, or is there more to be sorted out here?
Well, I suppose I haven't heard any confirmation on that yet. It seems there's a lot of it's one of those situations where there's a little bit of a fog about it all. There are some reports someone's got in. Then I know NBC in America, they reported that the COVID bubble has been breached, but everyone else is saying it hasn't. So I suppose we're still waiting on clarity. And you're right, I think that is one of the last roadblocks, apart from the roadblocks between the hotel and the stadium, which is basically all these fans literally obstructing. I mean, my colleague Mark, he sent me a photo earlier of, he was just underneath the Lowry. He sent a photo of United players looking out, kind of, I think, the fourth or fifth tier of the hotel, looking out the window at all these fans. It was almost this absurd scene, but you know, this is where we are now. Unprecedented scenes.
It really is. Like, is your gut feeling that this is going to be the start when it comes to other teams? Like, I mean, this is something that seems like the sort of thing that could kickstart something, but at the same time, Manchester United and their fans have almost been mobilised for so long on this front to be anti their owner.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the thing is, it comes down to the different situations, the different clubs, really. And there aren't too many equivalents of Manchester United in the Premier League, bar Arsenal. Arsenal are probably the closest. So the two clubs, who, I mean, this is another indication of this situation, just as kind of United and Liverpool fans came together last week, or United, Liverpool and Chelsea fans, United and Arsenal, who are kind of one of the great rivalries of the Premier League era, they really have common cause in terms of these US venture capitalist owners who almost see the clubs as kind of going concerns for themselves rather than, you know, football clubs whose primary purpose is to play football and try and represent their community. So I think actually Arsenal are the closest in that regard. But really, I mean, my view is that every fan in England, and I mean, it also, it applies in pretty much every other country, including Ireland, that every single supporter should have more investment in representation of their club, and that the idea of football clubs to be football clubs and social institutions who represent their area, and that's where they should start and end, and they shouldn't really be about anything else. And that it's that spirit, I think, or a spirit of demanding this, that this whole situation should really prompt.
Absolutely. Listen, Miguel Delaney, it's been great chatting to you. Thanks a million for taking the call.
Cheers, Owen. Thank you.
Cheers. Miguel Delaney of the London Independent there. You can check him out on Twitter. You can check him out on the Independent's website as well to read all of his work. So the current state of play outside the stadium, still a couple of dozen supporters waiting for the teams to arrive. That is according to Simon Stone of the BBC. Everything is peaceful, he says, and good-natured, but there is no sense that they will be leaving anytime soon. One of the interesting elements to all of this today, it's a very, very small point, but it's just worth mentioning, is that a large swathe of Britain's football journalists are on a social media blackout. So the reporting of this has come from various different sources. We've gone back to the television, we've gone back to our live blogs. Twitter has been largely ineffectual today to actually find out information. There are still some extraordinary scenes coming through from fans on social media about what's actually happened outside Old Trafford. There's also been a good level of debate online about the protest and whether or not people are for or against them. And when Miguel says it's 50-50, he's probably right. There are a lot of people. We've got big names coming out. We've got Jermaine Jean is coming out earlier on questioning the protesters and whether or not this is actually going to be a good look for Manchester United. Whereas on the flip side, you've got Gary Neville and Roy Keane on Sky Sports today saying they're all for the protests and they fully back them. So there are a number of very different plots to this whole thing. And the reporting of them is certainly one of the interesting ones. We can bring you some of the Sky Sports audio then from this afternoon. Gary Neville, as you can imagine, has had plenty to say. Here he is, his first reaction to the protests happening.
This is the consequence of the owners of Manchester United's actions 2 weeks ago. Obviously, there's a general distrust and dislike of the owners of this football club, but they weren't protesting 2 or 3 weeks ago before this happened. But generally, the Glazer family, along with a number of other families of football club owners in this country, were conniving and scheming behind the rest of football's back to walk away with the crown jewels. And today we've seen people protest at that. And the reason that this game is delayed is because of that.
Just to bring you some more information from the BBC, Gary Flintoff, who is BBC Radio 5 Live, who works with them and is a reporter, he was at Old Trafford and is now at Old Trafford again. So basically the media were removed from the stadium, it seems. But he said, according to the BBC Live blog, we've been allowed back into the commentary box, so we are sat where we'd usually be at this point with around 5 minutes left at the first half. He does, however, say that they are still awaiting a decision as to whether or not the game actually takes place. But if you're like me and you're reading between the lines there and you're saying that they're allowed back into the commentary box, then there is a chance that this game does take place. But as Miguel was saying earlier on, there is a 7:15 kickoff between Tottenham and Sheffield United. Will there be scheduling issues that put a late kickoff in Manchester United against Liverpool in jeopardy? Maybe, but surely this constitutes extenuating circumstances, especially considering the fixture calendar is just so clogged up at this point. Let's hear more from Gary Neville. Here he is talking, as you can imagine, about the Glazers.
Well, look, I've never thought they were brilliant owners, but I've also seen in football that there are worse owners than the Glazer family. However, I think all football fans should unite today behind what Manchester United fans have done. Because honestly, what they did 2 weeks ago was really dangerous for English football. We must not forget that. They tried to walk away and create a closed-shop league that would have basically created a famine in this country for every other football club. They tried to create a famine 2 weeks ago in English football, in Dutch football, in German football, in French football, all over Europe. Those 15 clubs would have walked away from their leagues with that money and basically destroyed the ethos of the pyramid of relegation and promotion in English football. So that's number one. So it's unforgivable what they did as a family 2 weeks ago. I get Graham's point around them paying themselves a dividend. We could walk into the chippy down the road tomorrow, make a bid, they could sell it and we could own the chippy, and the local public might not be happy with the new chips that they get. I get that principle of a free market, However, the Glazer family 2 weeks ago, they tried to implement something that would have damaged every single community in this country that's got football at the heart of it. And that is why they're dangerous. Perez is dangerous, Laporte, Agnelli. They are dangerous to the concept of equal opportunity and fair play in European football. Let's not forget what we're arguing about here. Today there is anger. I would hope tomorrow it switches towards mobilisation, towards reform and regulation and behind the fan-led review.
Gary Neville speaking on Sky Sports a little earlier on. There are still some fans at the stadium, a couple dozen supporters outside almost waiting for the teams to arrive. Everything seems to be pretty peaceful outside Old Trafford at this point. Things didn't get violent earlier on. Like, just to clarify that, there were a couple of bottles thrown here and there, but there wasn't any widespread violence. It was just astonishing, the scene, seeing hundreds of people outside, but most importantly, hundreds of people inside. It's just unbelievable scenes, especially since Manchester United knew this was going to happen and they had experience of this just a few weeks ago at their own training ground. We do have a commentary team who are supposed to be covering a game today. We've got Stephen Doyle and Brian Kerr with us. Stephen, might just go to you first. You've been, I presume, keeping an eye on this over the last little while, wondering whether or not you'd be commentating on a game. What's your sense of things and how quickly this thing turned from a game that might happen to a game that clearly just was never going to happen at 4:30?
It's strange, isn't it, though? Because I think a lot of people complain about the quality of these games, that they're maybe not as exciting as they would expect games between these two great clubs to be. But this is probably the most exciting action we've seen in a Manchester United-Liverpool game at Old Trafford over the last number of years. But it is disappointing that the match is not going ahead. I know there wasn't a huge amount riding on it. I think the game against Roma on Thursday night put this match into a different light for Manchester United, because they're cruising into that Europa League final now by virtue of that 6-2 hammering of Roma on Thursday night. So I think that Solskjaer, and you can see by the team he picked, he was going to go for it today. And I think he probably would have been pretty happy to take a victory against their arch rivals. I think Liverpool as well, obviously there's a bit of pressure on them to try and get a result to keep their faint hopes of Champions League football alive for next season. So there was a little bit riding on the game, even though it wasn't maybe as big as previous Manchester United-Liverpool meetings over the last number of years. While it is disappointing to see it getting a little bit hairy outside the stadium, and we did like seeing the flare getting thrown up at the Sky team in the stadium, I think this is kind of a culmination of football supporters feeling voiceless and being their opinions and their worries and their concerns about their club being left unaddressed for a long time now, nearly two decades since the Glazers took over the club. And I feel maybe that some Manchester United supporters were just at their wits' end. And, you know, what we've seen over the last couple of weeks, protests, the likes of Chelsea and Arsenal supporters, they felt that this was their chance now to make a big move against the Glazers and to let them know how they feel. Whether these multi-billionaires, the Glazers in America, really care about this is another matter all entirely. But I do think that United supporters are, there's a lot of them who have been following this club all their life and who've put a lot of money into the club, you know, from everything from buying shirts to season tickets, that kind of stuff. And they feel now that they're at their wit's end and they don't like the way the club is being run. They don't like the direction that the club is being taken. And they felt that this is maybe their last way of really protesting against what's happening at the club.
Yeah, that certainly seems to be the case. Brian Kerr, good evening to you.
Evening.
What were your initial thoughts when you saw what was happening earlier?
Well, I was surprised that they seemed to get access to the stadium and to the pitch so easily. And always on an occasion like this, I would have regrets that myself and Stephen weren't walking down the road to the ground today, past the places we see some of the interviews from, just outside the ground in that kind of open area where the statues are of Breslau and Charlton. And it's heavily secured around the ground. As we'd be walking down the road over the last couple of years, for the last many years, it's always been physical searches of our bags and our coats and stuff like that to ensure that whatever, we're not bringing anything untoward into the stadium. Now, obviously, that's probably all eased in over the COVID time. There's no necessity for that because there's been a lot less people turning up at the grounds. Obviously, the fact they can't get in. But I'm still very surprised. It's always looked very secure and very solid, the ground. And I'm kind of amazed that they were able to, given that people have said, and I heard Gary Neville saying earlier that there had been warnings during the week of vast numbers turning up to protest and the possibilities of some disruption happening. That really surprised me. It's kind of disappointing, but at the same time, I can understand, as Stephen said, all the frustration that's there with Manchester United fans. The protests that were there going back to 2005, initially when the Glazers got hold of the club in its totality, they kind of dissipated with the success as the success continued under Alex Ferguson. But I think, and other people have said this, The lack of success for the team, the lack of a league win in recent times, while Manchester City have been going, they're referred to as the noisy neighbours by Alex Ferguson at one stage, their success has been very obvious, and it doesn't seem like it's letting up in any way. This year they may win the Champions League, they will win the Premier League itself. They may win the FA Cup, but I think that would have annoyed Manchester United supporters. Liverpool's recent successes of the last couple of seasons also would have annoyed them further. And their efforts, the efforts of the Glazers and the people who work for them, and the whatever investment there has been in the team, which has been considerable over the years, hasn't manifested itself into trophies. The other things that have been mentioned about the ground, about the stadium being in a state of disrepair, I would concur with that to a degree, because I'm sure Stephen would agree with this. The facilities for the broadcasters, for ourselves in particular, at Manchester United, I would say are almost the worst in the Premier League with regard to us having a bit of space at the match to try and do the job we have to do. We're boxed into a row of three people and we're really, really squashed in, to the extent that it's hard to even open a program or open a page that you might have a few notes written on, which seems extraordinary. Good old Ron Jones, when I used to operate with him, Ron used to say to me, the biggest club in the world, Brian, with the worst facilities in the world, right? As only Ron could say, I can't imitate his beautiful Welsh accent very well. But, you know, so if that is representative of how things are around the stadium in general in comparison to other clubs, then they are at fault on that one, not just in relation to the team and progression of the team and the facilities, development of facilities, the arrangements for supporters, and you know where the structures themselves are actually going rusty. I hadn't noticed that, but I can understand that could be the case, because there hasn't been an awful lot done to the stadium for many years. But so all these protests, I think the question is, will the protests maintain momentum? And what effect will they have? I listened to Miguel very carefully. He didn't seem to have too much confidence that there could be dramatic change other than by government laws and changing the rules around ownership. I don't know how that can be backtracked with regard to someone, to these people, to the Glazers. Maybe for future arrangements they can have effect. The interesting one, will it gee up the clubs of other supporters to have supporters of other clubs to have more, let's say, aggressive or intense protests in the remaining games of this season? And let's see what happens next season. But you look at, you know, the likes of Chelsea, whose club supporters' protests were probably the first buckles that the first signs of buckling of the European Super League took place the night Chelsea were due to play the match, and the crowd turned up outside Stamford Bridge. So you wonder, you know, with the games they have, they've a big game at Manchester City, obviously, next week. Liverpool, their games have a less of a high profile. Southampton, West Brom, Burnley and Crystal Palace to go. Manchester United due to play away to Roma. Obviously, no deal there for Manchester United until their next home game. But, you know, I think we could see a situation where, let's say, you know, the Super Six or the not-so-Super Six, who are going to be part of the Dirty Dozen. We didn't know who the other three were going to be of the 15. Will the supporters of the Super Six, Arsenal, Spurs, Liverpool, Manchester United, Manchester City, Chelsea, will we see more of their supporters, let's say, being more outspoken and more aggressive in their protests, given that they can't get into the stadiums to the matches? Will they? I would think there's every chance that that may happen. Now, the clubs are warned, and we probably see a lot more security, a lot more police and horses around the ground. We saw the appearance of horses today to clear the supporters outside Old Trafford. I think there's a likelihood that that may happen. The long term or the short term return on that, will the clubs pay much respect to them? You may have a situation where we could have supporters representatives on the board, but you know, what effect will that have if they don't have ownership and they don't have a major impact on the decision making process?
Well, just to say that the game has been postponed, that is the breaking news. The game will not be played today, Manchester United against Liverpool. And Brian, I think if anybody was in any doubt now, today's protests have had a material impact on the running of Manchester United Football Club. And if you're a Manchester United fan who has been part of the green and gold protest for the last 15 years or whatever it's been, there has surely been a bit of a frustration that you felt that you weren't being listened to. Today, you feel like you've had a little bit of an impact. That should encourage maybe further protest, or feel that protest is at long last working around Manchester United.
Well, that's dramatic news, and I think it's shown the effect that the protests have had. Now, the point I was making earlier, will it encourage supporters of other clubs? I think it may well do. This is a serious situation now, where the game has to be rescheduled, and I'm sure the Glazers have no intention of turning up around Manchester for a long time anyway, given how their efforts to set up the European Super League went, and the reaction of their supporters, along with all the other supporters, was. So they're not going to show up, but this news will certainly come across to America, and I don't know whether it'll have a good or bad influence on the share price. That seems to have been unaffected. I mean, the share price surged up at the announcement of the European Super League. I think it's settled back down again since. This will have effect on it, but I think This will certainly encourage supporters to protest more frequently and more intensely. I don't think anyone's going to get away with that again, of breaking into the ground or getting someone into a dressing room. I don't think that's going to happen. But ultimately, you're going to have to. The clubs need supporters back in the ground. They want to have them back in the ground before the end of this season. Now they might have to have a rethink about that, because if they're in the ground, unless they go back to the old days of the fences, and serious fences they were too, pre-Hillsborough, unless they go back to that, they won't be able to keep supporters from protesting on the pitch or getting onto the pitch.
Well, here's the thing then. I wonder, is there going to be a bit of a backlash to today's protest?
From who?
From the Premier League, from rival supporters, even though rival supporters might have maybe a limited influence. But say from the Premier League, first off.
I don't think there'll be a backlash against the supporters, because what... You know, what action can the Premier League take against Manchester United as a result of today's events? I mean, can they penalise Manchester United for not having the stadium secure enough to prevent supporters running into the ground and causing disruption? They can't penalise Manchester United for the supporters protesting outside the stadium or outside the team's hotel. So I don't think there's a lot they can do. I mean, they can duck Manchester United a few points. It's not going to make a lot of difference to the current standing. They're, you know, A lot of points ahead. Sorry, the 12 points ahead of West Ham going into today's game. West Ham in fifth place in the table. So not going to have an effect on Manchester United and whether they win the league or not. But Manchester City are going to win the league anyway, and not going to be able to affect their European placing for next season. So I don't see that. I think a backlash from other supporters is unlikely. I think a lot of supporters of other clubs would be cheering them on, saying, fair play to you. We need to do something like this to affect our owners, to get them to think differently, to stop them ignoring us, to stop them raiding our pockets so greedily at the price of jerseys and for everything, for when you get into the ground, the cost of drinks, the cost of sweets, the cost of food, the cost of anything inside the ground is ridiculous at times. Just, people go along with it because they feel, oh well, I'm supporting the club, we might sign better players next year and all that, but in general they're getting rooked, people go into the ground. So I think supporters of other clubs will be looking at them saying, fair play, now we might really have an influence on the thought processes of these owners and these leaders within clubs. I would feel that may be more of the reaction.
And I guess today is proof that the reaction to the Super League just has not worked from the perspective of the big clubs. Like, I think, I know this is a Liverpool story, but I mean, John W. Henry's kind of po-faced video down the barrel of that camera that morning, I was wondering whether or not that would actually work when it came to supporters. I know United is a different situation. We didn't see that level of contrition from the Glazers, to say the least. But there were apologies. There was this attempt to put forward a we were wrong, you were right scenario. And that was clearly an attempt to prevent something like this happening, further protest, and it hasn't worked. The supporters have seen through that, Brian.
No, I don't think the supporters taken in by that sort of stuff. You know, the Glazers were missing in action, obviously keeping their heads down, letting Woodward take the flak. He apologised and so on. He's on his way out anyway. The Henry one at Liverpool, you know, he looked like a chasing boy, all right. But look, this is the same leader or owner who tried to implement the furloughing of staff during the COVID and reduction of the players' wages and increasing the season ticket prices and seat prices, while at the same time they've increased the number of spectators substantially by the rebuild of the stand, and they have plans to further rebuilding. But they still wanted to put up the season ticket prices. So they got knocked back on that. Mm. But that didn't stop them going behind everyone's back, bar the other connivers, to try and set up the European Super League. So they got their answer on that. But, you know, these fellas are fairly hardened boyos. They didn't make their money by being the most generous people in the world and by listening to anyone that has a whinge against them, unless it's very, very substantial protest. Well, I'm not sure what forms they could take. I think the big one would be if people said they weren't going to go to the stadium, they weren't going to pay for season tickets anymore. Mm. But somebody will pay for them. There's waiting lists at these top clubs for season tickets. And, yeah, that mightn't work either. But they have shown today that they can devise a form of protest that's very, very embarrassing for one of the biggest clubs in the world, to the extent that one of the major fixtures of the season has now been postponed. And there is, even though today's match was one of the least important in recent years in terms of the outcome for the table and you know, the winning or losing of the league wasn't involved in the game today, it's still one of the major fixtures in world football that people all over the world would have been waiting to see, and now it's not going ahead.
There's been a statement issued from Manchester United. They say, following discussion between the police, the Premier League, Trafford Council and the clubs, our match against Liverpool has been postponed due to safety and security considerations around the protest today. Discussions will now take place with the Premier League on a revised date for the fixture. Our fans are passionate about Manchester United and we completely acknowledge the right to free expression and peaceful protest. However, we regret the disruption to the team and actions which put other fans, staff and the police in danger. We thank the police for their support and will assist them in any subsequent investigations. And it is really interesting that I guess we have this whole element of fans coming back to the stadium and to inside the stadiums legally pretty soon as well. That, like, I wonder if there's almost a race against time here a little bit, that the protest needs to be done at the moment before fans go back in, Brian, because as you say, they can try and affect maybe protest or I guess boycotting games as they want, but by and large there will always be somebody else to pick up a Manchester United ticket. There will always be somebody to put their bum on a seat when it comes to this massive club.
Well, given the length of time it's been, I think the last match that we were at in England to cover for the show was Manchester City Manchester United last year. And so you take it since then, there haven't been people in the stadium since then. So look, everybody's gumming to go to a match. That's the truth of it. You know, everyone loved to get into a match at any level of the game. I've been fortunate enough to get into a few League of Ireland matches this year. It's been fantastic to get into a match. But although it's a bit of a surreal experience without the fans, with big numbers of people, there'll be no problem getting people to go in if and when anyone's allowed in before the end of this season. But now the clubs are going to have another problem, particularly Manchester United, in trying to ensure that those fans are peaceful, loving people that are going to sit in their seats with their masks on and maybe say nothing. Don't bring a poster in with you. Don't put a flag in. Maybe don't wear a yellow and green scarf. How are they going to manage that? And then they're going to ensure that nobody runs out on the pitch, which can be very hard to do if the mindset of the people is we're going to get out there. I mean, you see it, the odd unruly character running out on the pitch now these days, sometimes just glossed over. The security grab him and get him off the pitch quickly. But if there's a big number decide they want to do it, you know, they can do it. So I think the clubs might be a little bit more reluctant in the short term to have supporters back in the ground before the end of this season. But I think what was interesting in the statement you read out there was that there was no mention of placating the fans or protests in any way. It was more about we've had to call the match off because the police advised us to and the Premier League have gone along with it. But there wasn't anything about we understand there's an issue there why fans came in and protested or come around the ground and protested today or got into the stadium. There was none of that, you know. So obviously they're thinking about it and there's no, they're not in the mood for placating anyone. Another interesting one in my mind is, like, they didn't lose any more money today by not playing the match. Like, normally, if the crowd were going to come into the match, what would you do? You'd have to, season ticket holders, you already have their money anyway, but maybe the on-the-day ones that they say, well, Manchester United have on-the-day ones, probably not, but there's a lot of floating tickets around Manchester on the day of matches, I know. But so it didn't lose any extra money, I'd say, by not playing the match today. So that doesn't bother our income. But yeah, there certainly was no signs of any concession to the protests of the supporters in that statement.
Yeah, there's a Premier League statement now as well. Following the security breach at Old Trafford, the Manchester United versus Liverpool game has been postponed. It's a collective decision, they say, from the police, both clubs, the Premier League and local authorities. The security and safety of everyone at Old Trafford remains of paramount importance. And they go on to say that we sympathise with the police and stewards who had to deal with a dangerous situation that should have no place in football. The rearrangement of the fixture will be communicated in due course. We understand and respect the strength of feeling, but condemn all acts of violence, criminal damage and trespass, especially given the associated COVID-19 breaches. Fans have many channels by which to make their views known, but the actions of a minority today have no justification. Now, maybe there is a lot more footage to come out, but, Brian, it does seem that there was an element of restraint amongst the crowd today, I think. Like, obviously, there were a couple of projectiles thrown. Nobody wants to see fans on the pitch. Nobody wants to see people picking up the corner flags. Am I wrong to say it could have been worse from that standpoint or from the image of the Manchester United fans? Is it too forgiving to say that they restrained themselves a good bit?
I don't know. I didn't see enough of it. But that second statement from the Premier League, there was reference the fans there where they said they understand the strength of feelings, but this type of protest has no place. I'm not so sure they're right there. I don't think, first of all, the Premier League, is that somebody, a spokesman for the Premier League, speaking for all the 20 clubs, that they understand the strength of feeling? Obviously, the Big Six didn't understand the strength of feeling about their plan to go with the European Super League until after they announced it. So maybe this statement doesn't cover their really where they have the knowledge to say they understand the strength of feeling. Now, what we saw happening, we don't know the extent of what happened. I thought some of the stuff outside the ground looked a bit messy, because once the police started trying to move the crowd back and the horses got involved as well and trying to move them out, I saw some scenes of the barriers, the crash barriers being thrown in the general direction of the police. But unfortunately, they didn't. They seemed to hit some of the supporters that were at the front of the crowds that were maybe throwing a bit of flack at the police or at the club or chanting or whatever. So we don't know the extent of that. But, you know, I mean, what I saw of them running on the pitch and so on, they looked to me a little bit like they were embarrassed. They were shocked at how far they'd gone. They got there, and I saw fellas taking penalties on each other and taking photographs. The idea of arriving on the pitch at Old Trafford, like, it probably was all of their childhood dreams to someday be on the pitch as a player. But now you end up on the pitch as a protester, and you're kind of embarrassed. I'm out on the pitch. What do? Can we play ball? Or what? Who do we shout at? There's no one to shout at. There's only a few lads there, Graeme Souness and Roy Keane and Gary. Now, maybe they know that they're going on television, but it must have been a kind of surreal thing for those supporters out on the pitch. But then I saw that they left kind of tamely. I heard a report that as quick as they come on, they left as quickly. It seemed to be at some signal. So we don't know all the ins and outs on that, whether it was prepared. It was obviously a plan of how they were going to get in, what they were going to do. But it didn't seem like they caused a huge amount of bother or damage. If someone robbed a corner flag, I'd say good luck to them. I'm sure Manchester United and the Glazers can afford another set of corner flags.
Stephen Doyle, what's your reaction to the postponement of this game, and what happens next? It's been a big theme of this conversation all day about what this reaction to the initial protest means to the protest that might come from today.
Yeah, look, I think if supporters go out on the pitch and they're not harming anybody, you know, if they're not doing any kind of personal injury, causing any personal injury to anybody, well, you know, who are the Premier League to say that they shouldn't be protesting? As I said at the top of this, this is a culmination of, you know, years and years of a club being run very badly by the Glazers. You know, Manchester United are at the top of the wage bill stats in the Premier League. They pay the most money to their players, yet they haven't won a Premier League title since 2013. They've been in and out of the Champions League. Now, a club like Manchester United should be like Real Madrid or Barcelona. They should be in the Champions League every season. They should be in the knockout stages of the Champions League every season, but they're not, because the club is being run very badly. They brought in a manager who, would have got a lot of plaudits from the supporters coming in. He was done on the cheap. You know, they could have got a better manager who's got, better credentials with regards to winning trophies and that, but they weren't willing to spend the money on him. You know, they brought in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer just to appease the fans, to keep them quiet for a couple of years. And, you know, if he keeps them in around the top four, top six, and the club is still making money, well, they're going to be happy enough with that. Yeah. They're paying a goalkeeper £350,000 a week, and he's not even starting in the starting team every week. There's talk that Paul Pogba, that they might be willing to pay him £400,000 a week to keep him at the club. You know, you've got these people in this club who are willing to take it out of the traditional way of the competition to bring it into some crazy European Super League that didn't even have a, you know, broadcasting deal. It was all, you know, and I know there was plans to this, that. It was, the whole thing was just pie in the sky. Yeah. You know, you've got these guys who are used to American sports, the way American sports are run, trying to do that to an English football club that has traditions that go back to the 1890s, and they've made an absolute mess of it.
And the thing is today, Stephen, is that these pictures will be beamed to America, and I think that's a really important thing. I'm sorry to have to cut you off there. We are going to try and get to news very shortly. Brian Kerr, Stephen Doyle, a pleasure chatting to you, and apologies on behalf of everyone who's looking forward to Brian and Stephen commentating on the game today. I'm sure we missed a cracker, but we'll chat to you again soon, lads. Thanks a million. Take a quick break.
Thanks, all.
Paddy Power and the Football Show, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
We were due to be live from Old Trafford at the moment. We were due to have a second live commentary of the day. It was due to be Manchester United against Liverpool in the Premier League. As you may have seen, there has been a massive protest outside and inside Old Trafford this afternoon. The game has been postponed, and that is the current state of play. Scenes still simmering outside Old Trafford, but many of the supporters seem to have dispersed at this point. Delighted to be joined by Daniel Harris to discuss this. Good evening, Daniel.
Evening.
Your initial reaction to this when you saw the fans inside Old Trafford, like, absolutely incredible, something that we'd never seen before, really.
Yeah, it's a great day. It's a day of, I think, immense pride for anyone who really understands Manchester United, but also wider than that, for anyone who really understands what football is about. Ultimately, our football clubs, and this isn't just United, these are all the football clubs in our country, were built by the people, for the people, and a lot of them have been taken over by people who want to harvest all the money that they make for their own personal wealth, and that's not acceptable. What we saw, and the Super League is a tipping point, but this has been 16 years in the coming at United since the Glazers took over. In that time, they've taken £1 billion out of United. They haven't put a single penny in. And in that time, the ground's fallen into disrepair. Old Trafford used to be the best ground in the country by a mile. It's not the case anymore. And people have finally said enough is enough, because what's happened is the Super League was such a major overreach that it has caused people to actually have a look and say, that's not acceptable, because when the Glazers took over, ultimately, you could still go to United if you wanted to. Lots of people stopped going to United, but you could. Whereas the Super League is literally just taking football away from us. And people have said, that's enough. And the only way to make people notice is to do things that get in the way. And what you have as football supporters is you have weight of numbers. You have the ability to stop things from happening. And that will cause people to pay attention and to start thinking about how to stop this happening in the future.
Are you surprised that it reached this point today, that the Super League, after the apologies and maybe after the story had died down a little bit, it didn't go anywhere, but after it died down a little bit last week, that it flared up once again today?
No, not at all. Because if you look at it, United-Liverpool is the biggest fixture in English football. And so to be able to go and make a statement when not just the eyes of the UK, but the eyes of the world are on that game, and to go and make a statement and to get the game called off, is that shows people that the fans have had enough and it's no longer acceptable just to railroad things through without consulting the fans, because now the fans are going to do something about it. And I think what happened was that foiling the Super League, and it wasn't just the fans that foiled the Super League, but the fans were a big part of that. Foiling the Super League has shown fans that they have a lot of power, that there are more important enemies than our parochial rivalries that we have that are kind of the intra-club. Now, that stuff is all important on the pitch, but ultimately, one of the reasons why people have been able to take the piss out of football supporters is because football supporters have been divided. And one of the reasons it's not the case in Germany, for example, is that the clubs, they put aside their rivalry to fight the bigger enemy. And ultimately, the bigger enemy is the people that are trying to control football, the people that are trying to use football for their own ends, just to make money for themselves, or to sportswash, or soft power, or to stay alive, any of these things that we're seeing people using our football clubs for. And that's now not going to be the case. And I think foiling the Super League showed people what they can do, and I wouldn't expect to see less of this. I'd expect to see more of this, because fans of other clubs are going to see what United have achieved today, and they're going to think we need to do that as well. And eventually there'll be a domino effect, and we're now in a position where we need to keep up the pressure. Like, one postponed game is not going to change anything, but if the games keep getting postponed, if people keep protesting, keep making sure that their voices are heard, then people are going to have to act.
The next step on those falling of the dominoes is going to be interesting. It does seem that if there is going to be another club to follow Manchester United down this path, it might well be today's proposed opponents, Liverpool, who might go down that path.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, they also have, like, Liverpool is an activist city, so it's now a socialist city, and the clubs mean a lot to the people. And I think Liverpool in particular, because I think when you have a club where for whom people have died in one way or another, that kind of means that you're always grounded in the people who make the club what it is. And I think the fact that United have got Munich, so when the European Super League comes along, you've got not only United not going to be able to play in the European Cup, but United were the first English club to go into the European Cup. They defied the FA in order to do it because they thought that it was important to play in the European Cup. People died in the process of pursuing that aim. And for it then to be taken away is something that resonates in a very profound way with people, like people in my dad's generation. I mean, my dad, when Munich happened, my dad was 9 years old. He got home from school and he discovered that half the team were dead. and the manager might be dead as well. And that has a very profound effect on people, not just on the people of that generation, but on the way they pass those stories down to people of my generation and people who are even the generation below me. Because I think what people need to understand is the way that football clubs, the way that football perpetuates itself, is it's passed down to the generations in the same way that family stories are and the tales of family heritage and people who were kind of actually part of your family. But United, for me, is also part of my family history. And so when you mess with people's football in that way, what you're doing is you're messing with their identity or messing with who they are. You're messing with the routine of their life. And at some point, and you see it in politics as well, people get to a point where they say, I'm not going to take any more of this. And that's what we've seen today. And I think that Liverpool are absolutely the other club I would expect to see able to call upon those kinds of numbers and that level of organisation and that level of participation and exuberance and those things that make people take notice. And you don't get change by feeling warm, fuzzy sentiments. Like you have to do stuff. No one's going to give you what you want just because they think it's the right thing to do. Like, you have to persuade them, and that's what we're seeing.
There have been some criticisms today. Jermaine Genis on BBC Radio 5 Live said, what I'm seeing, I think it's gone beyond a peaceful protest. If you want to stand outside a stadium, then by all means do that. But there is a section of Manchester United fans that have let themselves down. They have their issues with the club and want the owners out. I'm not sure that this is the way to do it. He went on to say, from a security element, you can ask certain questions, but I think the people that are there are doing their job to the best of their ability, and this goes beyond their pay grade. So he was saying that on BBC Radio 5 Live earlier on. There are going to be voices like that, Daniel, who will oppose the protest.
Yeah, of course there are, but that, I mean, that whole mealy-mouthed, intellectually lightweight, quizzling nonsense is part of the reason we're in this mess to begin with, because no one really cared enough to do anything about it in 2005 when United supporters were telling the government, were telling the Premier League, were telling the FA, were telling the press that the Glazers were coming to try and steal their football club from them. And no one did anything about it. And Jermaine Genis, I mean, to be honest, has just made an absolute moron of himself on television or on the radio, whatever it was he was on, because what he's saying doesn't stack up. Like, no one's getting hurt. Like, no one's getting endangered. No one's getting injured. People are protesting peacefully. And that's what you have to do. Like, you're not going to bring about change by saying, please, sir, we'd really like it if you did this for us. That's not how it works. And if Jermaine Genis had any experience of watching a football club week in, week out, and understood what that meant and how it's woven into the social fabric of societies and communities, how it's woven into the identity of people, then he would understand that what he's done is he's just held up a sign saying, I am a moron, effectively. I mean, he's taken a lot more words to do that, but that is what he's done. Like, he doesn't get it. And there will always be people that don't get it. And often there'll be people who will have a media presence that enables them to do that. But the Glazers have taken £1 billion out of Manchester United. And there's a game that's been cancelled today. There are people like me who stopped going to Old Trafford in 2005 when the Glazers took over. So I don't know how many games I've missed at Old Trafford. But the fact that one game today has been cancelled, I don't think is going to make a very big difference to anyone. And fans on the pitch is what we want to see, because that is showing people that you can't stop the power of the people. And anyone who wants to stop the power of the people needs to have a long, hard look at themselves and reevaluate their priorities in life and reevaluate who they actually think they are and what they think is important.
What happens next in the context of Manchester United? Is it this again? Is it protest outside the ground at every single game until something happens? And then what is that thing? Again, just talking about Manchester United here.
I don't know. I mean, you're never quite sure, because it's kind of guerrilla protesting, isn't it? Where there's no pro forma of if you do this, then you do this, then you do this, then you'll get the result you want. You just have to keep up the pressure in whatever way that you can, whether it's by protesting and taking that direct action today, whether it's by depriving the club of money, whether it's depriving the sponsors of money. All of these things, every little thing you can do makes difference. And eventually we hope to get to a point where the government, you feel a little bit, like the government have backed themselves into a corner now where they're going to have to do something. It's not just going to be enough to fold the Super League. At the very least, you have to arrange a mechanism and enshrine it in law so that it's no longer possible for that Super League to even ever be on the agenda again. And the best way of doing that is with 50+1 ownership. I mean, you would start probably with voting rights, but the aim in the end would be to have 50+1 ownership, where you dilute the holdings of these people. And what should really happen is all the people who were involved in trying to make the Super League should immediately fail the fit and proper person test or whatever it is they call it now. Like, those people have proved themselves not fit to be custodians of our football clubs. They don't understand what football's about, or if they do, they don't care. They think that their personal need for enrichment is more important than that. And it's impossible to know where it's going to go from here, but it has to go somewhere. If this is it, then that's not going to be enough. Like, you have to keep up the pressure, and you have to surprise people, and you have to do things that are going to trip people up, and you have to have your big set pieces like today. Because that's the only way that's going to make people take notice. Because I think if you think about it from the government's perspective, Boris Johnson knows that a review of football and doing something in order to safeguard the league is not going to lose him any votes, is it?
Well, that's a really interesting point, and like from a popular standpoint, that makes perfect sense. I'm just on a final point here. I'm just interested in your take on what that would mean from the standpoint of the Conservative government and their previous policy making. Like, I get why they opposed the Super League, because it would damage British football. Is there a sense that there will be some sympathies politically towards the likes of the Glazers and the Cronkies and John W. Henry, because they are at least custodians of a club and they're making big money signings and the Premier League is popular because they are there or they are spending more money, or their clubs are at least spending more money on players, on wages and the idea of these super clubs?
It's not popular because of these guys, and these people aren't spent. Mm. But John W. Henry bought Liverpool because he wanted to make money out of it. Sure. He saw that it was undervalued, and at the very least he'd be able to have it ticking over. But what he could also do was turn it into an asset that'd be worth a lot more than what he paid for it. What Liverpool is worth now relative to what it was worth when John W. Henry bought it is stratospheric difference. Mm. So it's not Liverpool are good because of 100-odd years of toil and sweat from working people building the club up. I mean, Liverpool, the modern Liverpool, was built by Bill Shankly, who was very clear that he believed in socialism, where people fighting together for an end, for an important end. And that's what Liverpool represents. And John W. Henry is just passing through. He's not gonna be there in 50 years' time, is he? But Liverpool's still going to be there in 50 years' time, and the fans are still going to be there in 50 years' time. And it may be John W. Henry who legally owns the club, but the moral ownership of the club is the supporters. And those are the people that need to be heard, and those are the people that we should be listening to when we decide what the future of these clubs is.
Daniel Harris, great stuff. Thanks a million.
No worries. See you again.
Daniel Harris there on the line with us. So if you're just joining us, Liverpool versus Manchester United, Manchester United versus Liverpool, I should say, has been postponed. We will bring you a date for that if we get one this evening. But at the moment, there is no sign of that just yet. So no match there today. Earlier on then in the rugby, it finished La Rochelle 32, Leinster 23. And before we wrap up at 7 o'clock this evening, we will get Neil Tracy in conversation with Bernard Jackman a good 20 minutes about what happened to Leinster earlier on. We'll also bring you some of our sports pages from earlier on today, but we are sticking with this story for the next 15 minutes or so. Delighted to welcome Dominic King of the Daily Mail to the show. How are you, Dominic?
Very well, thanks. How is your good self?
Yeah, good. So we were chatting to Daniel Harris there about what happens next after the Manchester United version of the protest, and he seems to go along with the idea that if there is going to be one football club that takes this protest on and has their own little version of it or big version of it, it might well be Liverpool Football Club.
Yeah, I don't think you can sort of underestimate the depth of feeling of what has happened over the last 2 weeks. When we woke up to that announcement on Club Six Club website 2 weeks ago on Monday, it's just been an unbelievable situation, and anybody who thought that it was going to just sort of disappear in the shape of a week or once a round of Premier League games had taken place, you know, sorely mistaken. The anger and the frustration has been obviously voiced by Manchester United fans today. Some have stepped over the line. I'm just looking at some VT of scenes from outside Old Trafford on the TV at the moment. But this story is going to keep running and running while these people are in charge.
Have you been speaking to any of your colleagues who were at Old Trafford or tried to get to Old Trafford today?
No, I haven't at the minute. I've been looking at stuff from the Liverpool point of view, and I think it was probably apparent from about what time are we now? 4 o'clock, 4:30. That it was going to be very, very difficult for this game to be taking place because of the disruption that it caused to the match day protocols. I believe fans were actually inside the dressing rooms at Old Trafford. So COVID protocols have been breached, and you sort of have to stress to your listeners at the minute the safety and the procedures that you have to go through to get into a Premier League stadium at the minute is huge. You have to so as soon as that bubble was breached, I don't think there was any possibility that the players could be somewhere where the virus might have been.
Dominic, sorry, could you actually just explain what happens when you go to a Premier League game today? Like, not alone Old Trafford, any Premier League ground.
Yeah. Before you actually arrive at, before you actually physically go to the ground, you have to fill in health questionnaires to explain whether if you've had symptoms, if you've been in contact with people who've had the virus. You have to, explain if you've been tested, if you've been vaccinated. You have to wear a mask at all times once you get to the stadium. The club will first, all clubs, this is not just Premier League, this is right the way through the pyramid. They will decide whether you're fit the criteria to come into the stadium. Once you get to the stadium, you've got to sanitise your hands, you've got to wear a mask at all times, you've got to socially distance. Even though you're outside, your mask has to be on. The bubble that is around football is as secure as you could possibly imagine, and it's been like that for 12 months to make sure that the game can go ahead. Now, as soon as people have been in an area that is, in speech marks, safe, if that bubble's been burst by people who can't be legislated for them, there's no way that they would have allowed the teams anywhere near it.
So it's extraordinary then, in that context, that fans managed to get into Old Trafford.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to make any suggestions about how it's happened or whatever, but I would think that a security firm with not too many people on the, standing in the way of an angry mob, I don't think they would have offered too much resistance. The police, Greater Manchester Police, should have had a significantly higher amount of people, officers on duty today. I don't know. That's a question that they would need to answer. But clearly, when there's a groundswell of people who are intent on doing something, then it was going to be impossible to stop them.
Yeah, no, that's fair comment. I think there probably has to be questions though. It's just surprising how unprepared Old Trafford were, especially after the situation at Carrington recently, which seemed to have taken them off guard as well. But like, it's the aftermath of this which is going to be very interesting, Dom, because maybe I was cynical, but I definitely thought that the Super League story would die down. I thought that, especially once supporters came back to grounds, the protests maybe at Manchester United would die down, maybe around Liverpool and Arsenal it would die down a little bit as well, because there was always going to be enough people to take up the seats, say, if fans wanted a boycott. So these next few weeks are really vital. If there is a plan to actually up the protest, it probably needs to reach that point before supporters come back to the stadiums.
Jürgen Klopp said something to us last week about he thinks the animosity to the big six will, I want to correct myself. I don't want to use that term, big six. I hate it. The six clubs who were involved in this attempt to break away. He believes that the animosity will continue into next season. And Jürgen Klopp was really, really taken aback by the reception that Liverpool got at Leeds on that Monday night when the news broke. on that day, Liverpool had been out for a pre-match walk, and they'd come into contact with Leeds fans who'd been screaming about them being greedy and what have you. And Klopp couldn't sort of get his head around it, why the players were being targeted when the players have got nothing to do with it, and he's got nothing to do with it. And in one respect, you can sort of understand it. However, this is kind of the guilt by association thing. The players and the manager are the public face of the owners. Well, you know, and this is why I think it's an absolute disgrace that not one of these owners have stepped forward. I know John W. Henry issued an apology, but it was done on his own terms. He didn't answer any questions. It was a 2-minute video put out on his own terms, recorded by people he knew. The Glazers have put a statement out. It's not good enough. These people need to be held to account. They need to face media. They need to proper scrutiny. And until they do, until they acknowledge the depth of it, and understand the hate, the animosity, and everything that they've caused, then this is going to rumble. There is absolutely no doubt about it. I mean, whatever happens from now on, whatever, they will always be the owners. All these clubs, they will always be the owners that wanted to break away, no matter what happens.
It's kind of separate to what we've seen today, but even those brief, 24, 36 hours when the Super League was still alive after that Monday night football game between Liverpool and Leeds United, there was a sense that we could see some sort of division between the team and the boardroom. And then, obviously, the Super League imploded on itself and that conversation kind of went away. Could that conversation now resurrect a little bit in the aftermath of today where, as you say, Jurgen Klopp privately might well be fuming with everything that's happened over the last couple of weeks? John Henry can do as many down-the-camera videos over Instagram as he wants. Like, we know what Jurgen Klopp stands for. And privately, could that escalate into something more public where we do see players protest, even if it's just like a Leeds-type T-shirt before a game or something like that, yeah, over the coming weeks?
Well, I think Liverpool's response on the Wednesday night when the story broke that the six teams were withdrawing, you sort of, Kenny Dalglish spoke out against it. Jordan Henderson was the first person, was the first player from the squad to post a message about it, and then everybody followed suit. Joe Gomez, Alisson Becker, Trent Alexander-Arnold, James Milner, they all did it on various social media channels. They have let people know their feelings about it all. So I'm not sure what more the players can possibly do. I thought the Leeds players were brilliant. Out of it all, I thought Patrick Bamford was absolutely outstanding with the way he spoke. And he made the point about how quickly UEFA had jumped on top of everything. Yet when racism is involved, it takes them days and days to really sort of get in it before they even acknowledge that there's an issue to confront. But as soon as money's involved, then they couldn't wait to get involved. So the players have been absolutely brilliant, and I'm not sure what more they will be able to do. I might be jumping around a bit, but it's just coming into my mind. Manchester United, Luke Shaw was one, spoke out. I think Marcus Rashford did, Harry Maguire. Everybody knows the players don't want this. Everybody knows it. It's 12 owners. Let's not forget what was going on in Italy and Spain as well. 12 owners who are looking at ways where they can get more money. That's the top and bottom of it.
Yeah, like the only other element then that might develop over the next little while, Dom, and we kind of touched on this with Daniel, is maybe people coming out to paint these protests in a certain way over the last few hours. Like, I mean, I've just been watching it on television. I can't tell you for sure what happened. But you do have Jermaine Genis, as I went through earlier on. You've got Graeme Souness, who is on Sky Sports, saying somebody in the Sky Sports studio, which is obviously set up in the stand in Old Trafford, almost got seriously injured. If something had been directed a little bit closer, like that's going to be the other element to all of this. But it does seem that it's going to be largely based in fact, because society at large seems to have been against the Super League. Politically, it seems that they will be like the leaders in the UK will be behind the idea of the protest at the very least, which should help a little bit with the coverage. I guess since you disagree.
Conservative government. They'll do anything for an open goal.
Yeah.
And they're opportunists, and I wouldn't. I just totally disregard them. They've got no credit as far as I'm concerned. In terms of anything really. I wouldn't pay too much attention with them with football. They don't know anything about it. The people in charge of the country have got no idea and no empathy with football fans. They never have done.
But are they the people with the power at the end of the day? Like you're right in what you're saying, but is it going to be up to them if these protests actually materialise in real change?
I'm not sure what they can do. I mean, I was having this debate with someone this week in terms of. How can people be punished, or what can be done to sort of take steps? You can't sort of impose points deductions for next season, because then you'll make the league a joke before it's even started. You're then punishing people who had nothing to do with it. You can't kick them out of competitions because they haven't done anything to threaten the integrity of like a cup competition or anything. They haven't done anything this season to do that. I'm just not sure what could be done. I don't know how the government can get involved. I really don't.
There are so many different ways you can look at this and say there's a roadblock here, roadblock here, roadblock here. Like, I think for people who thought that this thing wasn't going to go any further, they might have been maybe a little bit encouraged by what they've seen today. And
you know what I just would like to say about it all, why this depth of feeling is still sort of so intense at the moment. I went to Barnsley against Rotherham last week, and Barnsley obviously are now in the playoffs. And I've got a chance of getting into the Premier League, and what a fantastic story that is for them, for what they've done since the turn of the year, the sequence of results that they've put together. Little Barnsley, you know, I don't wish to sound like I'm belittling, but you know, little Barnsley with the a little town, in South Yorkshire, and they've got a wonderful chance to make dreams come true. This is everything that football is about, a team that can come, you know, a young team trying the hardest to get to the highest level. And wouldn't it be fantastic if they came into the Premier League to show that, you know, these stories can still come true? And people say, well, what have Barnsley got to do with the Big Six that wants to break away? Well, if the Big Six had broken away, there would have been that much money for them. And then the money that would have then in turn filtered down, there would be no competition, and there would have been no scope for a Barnsley or to come up. There would be no scope for a Leicester to ever win the Premier League again. I've seen a Leicester fan actually interviewed after the FA Cup semi-final a couple of weeks ago, and they said, well, you know, it wouldn't be two against the Super League because it might be another trophy for us to win. Well, no, it wouldn't, because they'd never have the chance to be in there, because the other teams would have that much money. They could suck the life out of everybody else. It would have been absolutely horrific.
Yeah.
And that's why we have to understand that this cannot happen. It just cannot happen.
Dominic King of the Daily Mail, great chatting to you as ever.
No problem at all. Keep safe.
Thanks, Emil. It has been quite a day in the world of Premier League, and it feels like we have said that quite a few times over the last few weeks. We were due to bring you live commentary of Manchester United versus Liverpool. Instead, for the last 90 minutes or so, we've been bringing you the story of the day, the game that did not happen, the protest that did happen, the fans that did get into the stadium.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as spending a 9-month loan spell at Preston North End.